Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, we see now what we were hoping for. The news media and others in Israel are now taking things from our Hebrew Facebook page because it's getting big. And so they're taking stories and items from our Hebrew Facebook page and publicizing it without giving us credit, of course. They don't give us credit. They don't say we got it from the JTF Hebrew Facebook page. But they're taking it and publicizing it. Stories that we originated, stories that we publicized for the first time anywhere on the internet. For instance, the first time there was any wide publicity or any real substantive publicity on Mohammed Abu Khadir being a Jew hater, it came from our Hebrew Facebook page. That was the first time that there was any real substantive publicizing of his Jew hatred. And who is Mohammed Abu Khadir? Mohammed Abu Khadir is the Arab who was killed allegedly in retaliation, allegedly by Jews in retaliation for the murder of the three Israeli Jewish teenagers. Now, first of all, let me make clear that the six Jewish kids who were arrested for allegedly killing Mohammed Abu Khadir, I am not convinced that they're guilty. I am not convinced that this was, in fact, a retaliatory killing. I think it's very, very possible that other Arab Muslims killed this Arab Muslim. Remember, 99.9% of the Arab Muslims who are killed by their fellow Arab Muslims. So, I believe that there is a very good chance that this Arab Muslim was killed by his fellow Arab Muslims, and that the six Jewish kids that were arrested by the Israeli Shabak, which is the Israeli equivalent to the FBI, that these six Jewish kids are innocent. I think there's a good chance that that is true. But whether he was killed by his fellow Arab Muslims, or whether these six Jewish kids killed him in retaliation, the claim by Israeli politicians and the anti-Semitic Israeli news media that this was an innocent Arab kid. This was an innocent Arab Muslim. Look at this innocent Arab Muslim that was killed. How terrible it is. That claim is baloney. And we were the first people to publicize what baloney that is. This Arab, Mohammed Abu Khadir, who was killed, held up three fingers to laugh at the three Jews who were murdered, the three kidnapped Jewish teenagers. He was laughing at them, holding up the three fingers. By the way, that was what they did throughout the Muslim world. Throughout the Muslim world, they would hold up three fingers to symbolize the three Jewish kidnapped kids and laugh. Laugh at the fact that these three kidnapped Jewish kids were brutally murdered by the Muslim terrorists. Throughout the Muslim world, they were doing this, holding up the three fingers. They did cartoons with the three fingers. They did this in the Arab media. Everyone in the Arab world, the Muslim world, were holding up the three fingers and laughing at the fact that these three innocent Jewish kids were kidnapped on their way home from school and then brutally, savagely, cut to pieces and murdered by Muslim terrorists. In the Muslim world, they thought this was very funny. And they were celebrating the murder of these three Jewish kids. And Mohammed Abu Khadir, who later on was killed, he was also celebrating and he was also holding up the three fingers. So he was not an innocent Arab Muslim. Someone who supports the murder of innocent Jewish kids on their way home from school is not an innocent Arab Muslim. That's a supporter of terrorism and genocide and mass murder. That's not an innocent Arab Muslim. And again, I'm not even interested in the issue of whether you agree or disagree with the idea that maybe he was killed in retaliation, if he was killed in retaliation if Jews did kill him in retaliation, whether you agree or disagree, that's not even relevant. The point is, to portray him as some innocent Arab Muslim is a lie. And to compare it to the killing of the three truly innocent Jewish kids, because the three Jewish teenage kids, they really were innocent. To compare him, this terrorist-supporting, Jew-hating Nazi Arab, to compare him to the three innocent Jewish kids is an obscene comparison. So we were the first ones to really publicize it to publicize it on a major site. We were the first ones to do that. And as a result of our publicizing it, many other sites on the so-called right picked it up. Even the pseudo-right, many other sites picked it up all over the internet. The picture that we were showing was shown all over the internet, showing this Arab, Mohammed Abu Khadir, with the three fingers smiling and laughing. This picture was spread all over the internet, and many Israeli Jews saw it. That's just one example of how our Hebrew Facebook page has become now a catalyst to publicize things on a wide scale. Hundreds of thousands of Jews now on all types of different sites. Most of the sites didn't give us credit for it, but on all types of different sites, lifted the picture, picked up the picture that we showed on our Hebrew Facebook page, and showed it to many, many Israeli Jews. On our site alone, the post showing Mohammed Abu Khadir with the three fingers got 32,848 views. And the video we did got another 10,072 views, and that's just on our Hebrew Facebook page. So that's over 40,000 people seeing it just on our Hebrew Facebook page. And of course, it was also spread all over the place. It was on YouTube, and it was spread on dozens and dozens of other Facebook pages, including Facebook pages that are in no way connected to us and that didn't give us credit for the fact that they were taking this picture from us. So many Israeli Jews were exposed to this story because of our Hebrew Facebook page. The same thing happened with the decision of Tzipi Livni, Israel's so-called justice minister, to crack down on people on the internet who called for revenge. You're not allowed to call for revenge, and she wants to make it illegal to call for revenge. Arab Knesset members who praise Hamas, terrorists, and who praise the murder of Jews, that's perfectly legal, that's fine. Arabs supporting genocide against the Jewish people, that's perfectly legal, that's fine, that's free speech. But let a Jew call for revenge after innocent Jewish kids are murdered, that's incitement. How dare you? That's racism and incitement, and you should be prosecuted. When we exposed that from Tzipi Livni, we got over 52,000 views just on our Hebrew Facebook page. Just on our Hebrew Facebook page, we got over 52,000 views. Plus, many people picked up that story from us and put it all over the internet. Again, in most cases, not giving us credit for it. And I think it had an effect. I think it had quite an impact. Now, we're beginning to influence things. They're not giving us credit for it. The news media is picking up things from our page. For instance, we publicize the fact that in Tzipi Livni's office, there's an Arab prosecutor that works for her, an Arab attorney who works for her as one of her prosecutors. Imagine they have Arab prosecutors and Arab judges in Israel who are Jew haters. Can you imagine what happens to Jews that are placed in front of these judges and prosecutors? What chance does a Jew have for any fairness? This is the situation that Israel's traitor leaders are putting the Jewish people in. Anyway, this Arab prosecutor, one of the prosecutors in Livni's office, one of the attorneys in Livni's office, on his Facebook page, calls for the mass murder of Jews. He quotes from the Islamic Hadith, there is a Jew behind me, kill him. And says, how can anybody argue? Then he writes, how can anybody argue with the justice of this call, of this verse, saying there is a Jew behind me, O Muslim, kill him. And he says, how can anybody argue with the justice of this, the justice of saying all the Jews should be killed just because they're Jews? This is a prosecutor in the so-called justice Ministry of Israel, an Arab Muslim prosecutor. We publicized it. And then he, you know, he tried to do a somersault to get out of it, and, you know, but it was publicized. That was also widely publicized. We have publicized Arab models calling for the death of Jews, and one of the Arab models we publicized, she wound up losing her job as a model. I mean, it's just one thing after another, all coming from our Hebrew Facebook page, all coming from us. So we're beginning to influence things. Now, it's true that they're not giving us credit for it, which is dishonest, but they're taking it from our page. In most of these cases, we're the only ones that published that even brought the issue up in most of these cases. And they just take it and don't give us credit. But still, even without credit, we're bringing things to the attention of Jews that we want Jews to know about. Of course, we'd prefer to get credit because then we'd become a huge movement overnight. Hundreds of thousands of people would join our Facebook page. We'd become a mass movement overnight if they gave us credit for all the things we're exposing. So, of course, we would prefer if they were honest enough to give us credit, which is the ethical and appropriate thing to do. But even though they're not doing that yet, if we become big enough, they won't be able to avoid it. But even though they're not doing that yet, because of our Hebrew Facebook page, many things and many facts and a lot of information is getting out to large numbers of Jews in Israel that would not be getting out to those Jews. Way beyond our own numbers on the Hebrew Facebook page. And by the way, those numbers are, let me give you the latest. Remember, in March of this year, mid-March, and it's now mid-July, so it was 4 months ago. Before we started our advertising campaign, our Hebrew Facebook page had 1,830 likes or members. 1,830. We now have, the last time I looked, 17,478 members on our Hebrew Facebook page. 17,478, the last time I looked. I mean, and then we put out videos. We've got videos getting tens of thousands of views just on our Hebrew Facebook page. So I think you would agree that in a country of only 6 million Jews, Israel's a small country of 6 million Jews, that means we're beginning to become an influential force, a serious movement. We're not a mass movement yet, but we're a serious movement that's influencing things already. 17,000 plus members does not make a mass movement in Israel, not yet. But we're growing. And God willing, if we continue, we're going to get there. We're going to have the mass movement numbers that you need. If we continue growing, God willing. And so, just wanted you to know, we're growing. The news media is picking up stories from our Facebook page without giving us credit, but they're picking up stories. Many, many other Facebook pages, including those on the phony right, are picking up our stories. We're influencing a lot of things. Aside from the fact that directly from our Facebook page, you can look at the numbers under each post. We're getting tens of thousands of views for many of our posts. You can see the numbers under the posts. And so, a lot of important things are happening. And we're a force for truth. A force for truth that the Jewish people in Israel desperately need. This is what we dreamed of all these years. We dreamed of getting to the point where we would be able to become a mass movement. Now, we're on our way, God willing. We have a real chance here. We have a real chance to become a mass movement and to change history. I just wanted to share that with our great JTFers because I think it's something that should certainly encourage us. And by the way, don't be discouraged by the fact that they don't give us credit when they take things, when they steal things from our page. Don't be discouraged over that. Because that's because we have 17,000 plus members right now. If we ever, God willing, have 100,000 members, again, 100,000 members in a country the size of Israel, would be a mass movement. If we ever have 100,000 members, God willing, they won't be able to just take things, or if they do take things without giving us credit, they're going to look pretty bad, because so many people will be seeing it directly on our page, it will make them look pretty bad. Now they figure they can get away with it. They figure, they have 17,000 members. You know, we don't want to publicize them, so let's just swipe this from their page and try to get away with not giving them credit. That's what they're doing now. But if we become big enough, they won't be able to get away with it for long. And yes, our English language Facebook page is also growing. It has 1,400 plus members. The English language page is growing primarily because of the great Dan Ben Noach, but it's growing. And so, you know, we want it to grow much more, and I really, really believe that if we become a huge movement in Israel and receive tremendous publicity from that, I believe the English language movement will become big as well. I really believe that. I believe that that will happen. I saw that happen when our leader, Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, was elected to the Knesset, and all these great things happened in Israel. I saw what it did to our movement in America. And I believe the same result will occur if we become a mass movement in Israel. I believe the English movement will also become big. And that means we'll be able to influence things in the United States as well, including the presidential election and all these other things that we want to have an impact on. Help us. We have a real chance here. You can see the numbers every week with your own eyes. Help us. This is our chance, JTFers. This is our chance to change history. You are the backbone of our movement. We depend on your help. Four things you can do. Number one, we need your prayers. Pray for our success. Pray, of course, for Israel and for the Jewish people in general, and pray for our success. Your prayers are very important. That's number one. Number two, when we show you English and Hebrew videos that we bring, we bring it on the forum, and we sticky thread it on in the general discussion section. Please like, comment, and share those videos on Facebook. That promotes us. That boosts us in the Facebook search engine and in the Google search engine, because the Google search engine picks up things that are on Facebook. So like, comment, and share on Facebook, and like, favorite, comment, and mirror on YouTube, because those videos also appear on YouTube. That's the second thing, helping with the videos. The first thing is praying for us. Second thing, helping with the videos. Third thing, only good posts. Please, good posts and good threads. Put up the best threads and the best posts, and put up as many as you can on our forums and on our Facebook pages. We need good posts and threads so we attract new members. That's the third thing. And the fourth, is the most important. Not that the other three are not important, the other three are essential as well, but the fourth is the most important, because if we had big money now, you know how quickly we'd become a mass movement now? If I had really big money, within several months we'd be a mass movement, we'd be changing Jewish history. Can you believe this? I mean, we've proven that we have appeal when we start advertising and spreading the word. Our message has appeal among large numbers of Israeli Jews. We've proven that. But we urgently need financial support. We're a little bit in over our heads as it is. We're a little bit in over our heads with the amount of money we're spending on advertising. So we really need your help. Help us. Every check, money order, cash donation makes a big difference. We've got to continue the campaign. We've got to step up the campaign, because we have this shot now. We can't let this slip out of our hands. Make a difference. With us, you make a real difference for Israel and for the Jewish people. And you know that God blesses those that bless Israel. So you make a real difference when you help us. Checks, money orders, cash donations sent to our post office box, every single one of them is very important. And if you prefer, for convenience sake, to do it online with your credit card instead, all you have to do is go to the donate button, on the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. There's a donate button in English on top. The whole Hebrew main page is in Hebrew, except for that donate button on top. The donate button is in English. You go to the donate button, and you can make a contribution through PayPal, and it's very convenient. It just takes a few minutes. So, I think it's clear that Baruch Hashem, thank God, we're growing. Thank God, we're influencing things, but we want to do much more. Much more. Because you see all the things happening in Israel, terrible things happening, and the Jewish people and Israel need us now more than ever. We've got to, as quickly as possible, become as big as possible so that we can save the Jewish people and Israel from disaster, God forbid. Great. Now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Discuss these three Jews, Dustin Hoffman, Bob Dylan, and Lloyd Kaufman," unquote. Well, Dustin Hoffman, of course, the famous actor, is a left-wing Democrat. He never did anything for his fellow Jews, as far as I know. And he supported the Arab Nazi Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader, who's an Arab Nazi who supports the destruction of Israel, and who's a vicious anti-Semite. Dustin Hoffman, the Jew, supported him. So, obviously, I don't think very much of Dustin Hoffman, and Dustin Hoffman is a wealthy, influential actor who certainly has the ability to, I mean, if he helped us, if he would support us in a substantial way, he could change Jewish history. He could save the whole Jewish people. We just need one Dustin Hoffman, one powerful, influential, wealthy person who's willing to make us their pet project. And we're in. And we're on our way. We'll shoot up like a rocket. That's all we need. But instead, Dustin Hoffman is supporting Ralph Nader. You ask about Bob Dylan, another example. Bob Dylan, who was Robert Zimmerman, he changed to a non-Jewish name to obviously, he didn't want to have a Jewish name, so he changed his name from Robert Zimmerman to Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan is of course, extremely famous, influential, wealthy, had a huge influence on music in the United States, huge, had influence on the Beatles and had influence on all the big musicians of the 1960s that changed American culture and American history. So this is a very important person in American culture and in American history, Bob Dylan. Very important. He met Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, our great leader, in 1971, and was very impressed with the rabbi. The rabbi, of course, was extremely charismatic and was an unbelievably impressive person. He was very impressed, and he publicly praised Rabbi Kahana at the time. This was in 1971. He also went on a trip to Israel. But then he realized that that's controversial, and Jews don't like that, and the Jewish leaders don't like that, and the Jewish establishment don't like that, so he backed off of that, and now he tries to distance himself from what he said in 1971 when he met Rabbi Kahana and was clearly very impressed with Rabbi Kahana. He then became a Jew for Jesus, and then turned back to being a Jew, becoming a Jew again, and then turned back again, and he's been back and forth and back and forth so many times. What a waste. What a waste. If we had one Bob Dylan who would make us his pet project, we could save the Jewish people. And then you ask about Lloyd Kaufman. Now, Lloyd Kaufman is a film director and a producer, but I don't know, I just know in general he's a film producer and a director, but I don't know anything else about him. I really don't know much about him, so I can't really comment on him. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we now go to our great friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, "Shalom Chaim, after Moses and Rabbi Kahana, who do you think is the next biggest Jewish hero? Thanks," unquote. Oh, we have a lot of Jewish heroes, Joe. Avraham Avinu, Abraham our father, Yitzchak Avinu, Yitzchak is Isaac, Yaakov Avinu, Jacob. Our three forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, were all great heroes, tremendous heroes. David HaMelech, King David, what a hero King David was from the time he killed Goliath, the giant, onto the battles that he led, the incredible, spectacular victories on the battlefield. King David was an incredible hero, and the Mashiach, the Messiah, will come from King David's lineage. And of course, the Maccabees and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, like all Jews, was ordered by the Romans to stop preaching Torah and refused. He continued to preach Torah. He continued to not just preach, he continued to teach Torah. The Romans made it illegal and said anyone who teaches Torah will be killed, will be murdered. Knowing that, Rabbi Akiva ignored that and continued to teach Torah. And the Romans gave him a chance to say, no, I won't do it anymore. He refused. They skinned him alive. They literally, with metal razors, ripped the skin off his body. Can you imagine how painful that is? Before this happened to the great Rabbi Akiva, his students were saying, oh, Rabbi, they were crying and saying, oh, Rabbi, what are you saying now? What are you saying now? How do you feel about this? They wanted to know what his thoughts were at a time when he was facing his final death. They were crying and they were very upset, of course, about what was going to happen to their great rabbi, who was one of the greatest Jewish sages in history. And Rabbi Akiva said, all my life, I wanted to be able not only to live for Hashem, but to also be able to give my life for Hashem, to prove that I also am willing to give my life for Hashem. And now I have the merit of being able to do this. All my life I wanted to be able to prove that I'm willing to do this. And so he smiled and was calm and was thankful to God right before they ripped the skin off of his body. The Romans, Yimash Mamba Zechram Shem Reshaim Yirkav, may their name and memory be obliterated, may the name of the wicked rot. But these are examples of the type of Jewish heroes we have had throughout history, Joe. Many great Jewish heroes. Thank you, Joe. And we now go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, what do you think of the Jerusalem light rail, unquote. I'm in favor of Israel having a rail system. I think it's good. I think it's good in terms of saving energy. I think it's also a good system of getting around and offering people an alternative to driving. It cuts down on traffic. I think it's good that Israel has a rail system, but I'm not sure that the way Israel is doing it is the most efficient way, because you have the Histadrut labor unions and extra costs, and so there's a lot of corruption here. And a lot of extra costs and cost overruns and delays and other problems. That's what happens when you have a country that is blackmailed by socialist labor unions like the Histadrut, and when you have corrupt politicians that allow that to happen. So the general concept I like, but the way it's being done, because of the corruption and the union influence in Israel, the way it's being done, I'm not happy with. Binyamin now writes, too, the BDS is the Boycott Israel Movement. The BDS movement wanted to boycott companies building it, even though it serves Arabs as well. Please comment on the Arabs destroying the stations in their neighborhood. This is my plan. Build a fence around the light rail in the Arab neighborhood and don't rebuild the stations there. Just restore the infrastructure, rails, wires, traffic signals, etc. Then fence in the Arabs as if their neighborhood is a zoo, so they can't destroy Jewish infrastructure. Even animals in a zoo don't act like this. The lions and tigers don't destroy stuff in their environment and don't attack people unprovoked, unquote. Well, no, I agree with you. I think it's ridiculous that they build stations for the Arabs. Why should they build anything for the Arabs? The Arabs want to destroy Israel. Why should Jews build anything for them? The Jews should have one goal when it comes to the Arab Muslim enemy. To get him out. To encourage him to leave. That is what the Jews should be doing. And of course, if they attack and attempt to destroy infrastructure, that's terrorism. Anyone committing an act of terrorism endangers Jewish lives should be killed. Anyone who's endangering the lives of Jews should be killed. You know, when you tamper with rail lines and wires and traffic signals, that can lead to terrible accidents and many people can be killed. Arab terrorists who engage in this activity should receive the death penalty. Benjamin, let me let you in on a little secret. If we're ever in power, I assure you, the Arabs won't dare try to destroy any stations. The main thing on their mind will be, how do we get out of this country as fast as possible? Thank you, Benjamin. And we now go to the great Lewinsky stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Native white Europeans are just as Nazi as the Muslims," unquote. Unfortunately, in many cases, that's true, Lewinsky stinks. And Lewinsky stinks writes, "Do most Israelis hate the six accused kids," unquote. And Lewinsky stinks is referring here to the six Jewish kids who were arrested for allegedly killing this Arab Jew hater and this Arab Muslim Jew hater in retaliation. Which, again, I'm not at all sure that they're guilty, not at all. But do most Israelis hate them? Probably most Israelis are brainwashed. The news media and the so-called rabbis who get paid by the government, and everybody else is telling them, oh, this is terrible, what they did is terrible, you can't do this, this is an innocent Arab. So probably, because they're being brainwashed. But if we became a mass movement, Lewinsky thinks, I assure you, Israeli public opinion would change on many issues. I assure you, we would make a big difference. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, was the Satmar Rebbe the Jewish Martin Luther, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, unquote. The Satmar Rebbe, I don't know if you can compare this to anybody, such a sick person. I mean, he represents the sickest type of philosophy. You see the Satmar Rebbe, the current Satmar Rebbe now, issuing statements basically saying that the three Jewish teenage kids who were murdered got what they deserved because they were living in the territories. They're settlers. And all this land should be given over to the Muslims. The Muslims should have all of Israel. Israel doesn't have a right to exist. We're not allowed to create a Jewish state until the Mashiach comes. That's what this Satmar mental case is saying. And he's not a rabbi. He's a mental case. He represents the worst type of Jewish anti-Semitism. A real rabbi? Makes statements? Blaming innocent Jewish kids for being murdered by Muslim terrorists and saying the Muslim terrorists are right, the land of Israel belongs to them? That's a rabbi? That's an evil Semitic, this is evil Semitic fungus. By the way, I have met Satmar Jews and ex-Satmar Jews who have become pro-Israel, who don't go along with what their cult teaches them. So let's not curse all the Satmar. But the movement in general is an evil movement. If they're a Satmar that we can save and pull out of the movement and make them understand and see the light, then we should try to do that. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we now go to the great Yimach Shmo Rejabnik, who writes, and I quote, "Please debunk the following piece of information found on Jewish Women's Archive." Quote, "The legislation that authorized rabbis to force Jewish husbands to give their wives a Jewish divorce was a response to the social phenomenon of Jewish women who, in the Middle Ages, appealed to the Muslim courts to coerce their husbands to give them a get, and who were even willing to convert to Islam if their husband would not agree to divorce them," unquote. Do you know anything about JWA, JWA meaning Jewish Women's Archive? The overwhelming majority of Jewish women were not willing to convert to Islam to get a divorce. Okay? This feminist, left-wing, self-hating piece of garbage organization. There's nothing Jewish about them. They're self-hating, feminist traitors. And I support the rights of women, of course. Jewish women, thanks to Jewish women, the Jewish people exist. Jewish women were the ones who saved the Jews in the land of Egypt. It was because of the Jewish women, the merit of the Jewish women, that God saved the Jews from the land of Egypt. The Jewish women refused to murder the Hebrew babies when Pharaoh ordered them to. They refused. The Jewish women got Jewish men to continue to have children, because the Jewish men were going to stop having children and said, why should we raise children? Then Pharaoh's just going to kill them. We don't want to have any more. We're leaving our wives. We're not going to have any more children. This is the end. We're not going to bring children into a world like this. And because of Jewish women saying, you can't do this, you'll destroy the Jewish people, Jewish women are the ones who convinced Amram, who was the father of Moshe Rabbeinu, of Moses, and who was the leader of the Jewish community in Egypt at that time, convinced Amram and convinced the other Jews that they have to continue to have babies. Thanks to Jewish women, the Jewish people continue to exist. And Jewish women did not worship the golden calf. And Jewish women were not part of the sin of the spies who didn't want to liberate the land of Israel. The Jewish women did believe in God and did want to liberate the land of Israel. So Jewish women were in a much higher level spiritually and morally than the Jewish men. And thanks to Jewish women, the Jewish people exist and were saved. When they got out of Egypt and in the land of Egypt, Jewish women saved us. So I'm very much in favor of Jewish women and the rights of Jewish women. But feminists who hate men, who in most cases are lesbians, and who hate men, and who hate Judaism, these disgusting feminist hypocrites, but never, never, never have a bad word to say about Islam. They're always talking about rape, but never say who the vast majority of rapists in America are. Who are the vast majority of rapists? Black men. Do the feminists ever dare say that? These phony hypocrites? Why don't they talk about this phenomenon in the black community where it's okay to rape women? That they never say. In Israel, over 90% of the rapists, well over 90%, are Arabs. Do the Jewish feminists, the left-wing Jewish feminists in Israel, ever say that? Do they ever say, what is this with Muslims and rape, and why does Islam justify rape, and what is this? This is terrible. No. The Jewish feminists support the Arab Muslims, who are over 90% of the rapists in the land of Israel. The Jewish feminists in America support the black rapists. They support blacks and black culture in general, and that's a culture that has produced the vast majority of rapes in the United States. So the Jewish feminists and feminists in general are scum. We support women's rights. We support women. We honor women. We respect women. But we're against low-life traitors, and the feminists are men-hating, lesbian-supporting, baby-killing, anti-Semitic, low-life scum. Thank you, Yimach Shmo Dejavnik. And we now go to the great paper cut, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please comment on why so many whitey women's are joining Islam. Is it a lack of love from daddy, unquote? Well, I'll tell you, I don't know which daddy, I don't know if you're referring to daddy meaning their boyfriends and their husbands or referring to their actual fathers, but I want to speak about their fathers for a moment, because I believe that most of these white women that go with blacks and that go with Muslims and that go with Islam, I think that most of these white women are rebelling against their fathers. They're trying to punish their fathers and trying to punish their parents and their families. I think that that's what this is about in most cases. And by the way, I'm not against white and black couples, interracial couples. If it's the same, you know, if they're the same religious belief, I'm not against it. If they, you know, if they have come from the same religious background, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. if they're both righteous, if there's a righteous white woman and a righteous black man, or the other way around, then I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But the desire of white women to become Muslim, that is certainly evil. And the desire of white women to specifically go with the most evil cultures, the Arab culture, the black culture, the Muslim culture, that is certainly an abomination. And I think a lot of it is an attempt to punish their families and their parents. It's rebellion against their families and their parents. Thank you, Papercut. And we go now, and of course, in the end, they wind up regretting it. Boy, do they wind up regretting it, because after they get married, they find out just what type of husbands they married, husbands who beat them and rape them and brutalize them. And thank you, Papercut. And now we go to our great friend Manch, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, why don't you plan street-level activities, demonstrations in New York to take advantage of the events in Israel and to raise JTF visibility, unquote. It's not a bad suggestion, Manch. The only thing is we're so busy. I'm so busy with what we're doing with Israel now. I'm really overwhelmed by what we're doing in Israel now. We're just so busy with it. And that, Manch, is giving us a chance to become a mass movement. So I have to concentrate on that. Will it eventually... I believe that it will spill over to the English language movement. And when it spills over to the English language movement, we will... I hope we will have demonstrations and street-level activities. I want to have demonstrations and street-level activities in Israel as well. But right now, we're doing so well, Baruch Hashem, thank God, on the Hebrew internet, with our Hebrew Facebook page, we're doing so well that we're concentrating on that. And it's a lot of work putting together demonstrations and doing these other types of activities. It's a lot of work. It would take us away from the excellent Hebrew Facebook page and the Hebrew activities that we want to concentrate on and the Hebrew videos. It would take us away from that. Eventually, I do believe that we have to have those types of activities. Yes. Thank you, Manch. And we go now to a new member, Jansom. Welcome to our forum and welcome to AskJTF, Jansom. Jansom writes, and I quote, when people like Alex Jones and others discuss America, they always add Israel into the mix, which angers me. Which is the best way to answer them, unquote. Well, first of all, I don't know if we need to answer them. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think that most of them are anti-Semites who are just beyond the pale, that you're not going to convince. If you're responding to them, though, if they attack you on YouTube or on Facebook and you want to respond to them, I mean, obviously, you know, the things they speak about, everything they have is upside down. They never speak about the fact that the Muslim world believes in a religion that wants to destroy all non-Muslims. That they never speak about. In fact, if you raise that issue, they'll say you're part of a conspiracy to create wars against the Muslims, and they'll defend the Muslims. So the real conspiracies, like the conspiracy of the Islamic world to wage jihad against non-Muslims, which is a conspiracy that anyone who isn't blind can see happening every single day, the real conspiracies they don't speak about. The conspiracy of the anti-Semitic media and the anti-Israel media not to report the truth, that they don't speak about. They don't speak about the real things. Everything they twist and turn upside down and distort. They're sick, evil people. And if you want to answer them, you can answer them and prove that they're sick, evil people and that they're not dealing with the true conspiracies. But in most cases, it's not going to do any good with them. But if other people are watching and you're debating back and forth, you know, I don't know. But generally speaking, they're a complete waste of time, in my opinion. Thank you, Jansom. And we now go to the great Dan Ben Noach, who single-handedly is responsible for most of the growth in our English language movement on Facebook. Single-handedly, Dan Ben Noach does this. When we do videos, when we put up the videos in English on the English Facebook page, all of a sudden, thanks to Dan Ben Noach, we have like 150 or 200 shares you know, it's being shared on all these pages, and all these people are coming to us who never came to us before. That's thanks to Dan Ben Noach. Dan Ben Noach is a one-man army. God bless Dan Ben Noach. Dan Ben Noach writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, should JTF support the Chonenu organization, which provides lawyers to Tag Mechir and Jews who are arrested for defending themselves? Yes. Yes. It's a good organization. They do good things. I don't know if we agree with them on everything, but they do defend Jews that are in trouble, that other people won't, that nobody else will defend, and that makes them a good organization. Yes. They are worthy of support. Yes. Thank you, Dan Ben Noach. And we now go to the great Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, I just discovered some slime ball from England named Gerald Kaufman. Didn't know anything about him until today. Please tell us more about him, unquote. Well, Gerald Kaufman, for many years, was, I don't even remember how many years, but I know I was a kid, and he was already in the Jewish Labor Party. He was an MP, a member of parliament in England when I was young. When I was young, he was already a member of parliament in England. Very active in the Socialist Labor Party in England. He is the worst self-hating scum that you could imagine. He says Yasser Arafat, the Arab Hitler who murdered thousands of Jews, is his friend. He says the Irgun, the Jewish freedom fighters who saved Israel and saved the Jewish people, are terrorists. Arafat is his friend, but the Irgun are terrorists. He compares the Hamas terrorists, who openly call for the mass murder of all non-Muslims, and especially for the mass murder of all Jews. He compares them to the Warsaw Ghetto resistance to the Nazis in World War II. In other words, the Jews, who were fighting back against the Nazis because the Nazis wanted to exterminate them, he compares the Jews who were fighting, the Jewish resistance to the Nazis in World War II, he compares that to Hamas. In other words, Hamas is like the Jews who were fighting against the Nazis. And Israel, the Israeli Jews are the Nazis. The Israeli Jews are the Nazis. And he calls Israeli Jews Nazis. I mean, just, you can't, it doesn't get any worse than him. And he's so damn ugly. Why are these self-hating Jews so damn ugly? David Ben-Gurion, Woody Allen, Barbara Streisand, Ruth Messenger. They are so ugly, these self-hating Jews. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. And by the way, the other Jews in Israel, the right-wing Jews in Israel, are actually very attractive people. And the self-hating Jews are so damn ugly. You go to a demonstration of peace now, or the left, or one of these left-wing rallies, 99% of the people there don't look human. They don't look like you. They don't even look human. Everybody looks like Albert Einstein, or Chaim Weizmann, or David Ben-Gurion. And that's what the women look like at these rallies. The women look like David Ben-Gurion and Albert Einstein. I mean, just, it's unbelievable. And he has that look. He has that Edwina Koch look. He looks like Edwina Koch. Just so ugly. So atrocious. He's ugly on the inside. He's ugly on the outside. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we now go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. And the great Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, debunk the following. Since we can die for avodah zarah, sexual immorality, or to save another life, we can give land for peace to save lives. Unquote. Okay, great question, Dr. Dan. Of course, this is complete nonsense, the people who say this. There are 613 mitzvot, commandments in the Torah. It's called Taryag HaMitzvot, 613 commandments. We're allowed to violate all of the commandments to save our lives, because life is precious in Judaism. We're not like the Muslims who cherish death. The Muslims love death. We love life. And so, if it's to save a life, you can violate the Sabbath. Only, by the way, to save a life. But you can violate the Sabbath. You can break all the commandments except for three. There are three commandments out of the 613 that you cannot break even to save your life. One is Avodah Zarah, which means idol worship, idolatry. You're not allowed to worship idols, even pretend to be worshiping idols to save your life. If they say you bow before this idol, or you worship this idol, or I'll kill you, you're supposed to be willing to die. And many Jews in history did give their lives, refusing to engage in Avodah Zarah, in idolatry. The second commandment that we're not allowed to violate is sexual immorality, as Dr. Dan writes. Gilui Arayot, it's called in Hebrew. Gilui Arayot means sexual immorality, incest, homosexuality, these other perverse and evil things. We're not allowed to engage in that type of behavior, even if someone threatens to kill us. And Shfichut Damim, which means the shedding of blood. We're not allowed, if someone says, okay, I'll let you live, but you kill him, you're not allowed to kill somebody else in order to save your own life. You're not allowed to do that. If someone says, you kill him and I'll let you live, it's absolutely forbidden. You have to be willing to die and refuse to do it. So those are the three commandments that we're not allowed to do. So, simple-minded, ghetto-minded, pathetic Jews say, oh, you see, those are the only three commandments. So that means to save lives, we can surrender Jewish land in Israel. Well, obviously, surrendering Jewish land doesn't save lives. It costs Jewish lives. Every time Israel gives up any Jewish land, we wind up losing Jewish lives, obviously. But anyway, let's deal with this stupid argument from these unbelievably pathetic Jews, including so-called rabbis. By the way, I don't know the percentage, but obviously there are a lot of rabbis who wouldn't say something this stupid, but we have a lot of rabbis who will tell us, you can give up land for peace, because it's to save Jewish lives. It's pikuach nefesh, it's to save Jewish lives, supposedly. This is the ultimate example of someone who has no understanding of Torah Judaism, none, zero. If we're not allowed to wage war, you're only allowed to do it for these three mitzvot, then we're not allowed to wage war, because when you wage war, you're endangering your life. So we're never allowed to wage war. If they come to attack us, we're not allowed to fight back, because we might get killed. If you wage war, you might get killed. And yet in Judaism, there's something called Milchemet Mitzvah, an obligatory war where Jews are obligated to go to war, obligated to risk their lives. And obviously in wars, people get killed. So why do we have Milchemet Mitzvah? Why do we have an obligatory war? If you're allowed to give up land to save lives, then you can't ever have a war. Then why do we have an obligatory war in Judaism? There are times when you're required to go to war. Why did God command the Jews to go to war to liberate the land of Israel? God didn't know that it's you risking people's lives when you go to war? Why are we commanded in all generations, under certain circumstances, to be willing to go to war and be willing to give our lives? This is so absurd. Obviously, in a war, you're risking your life. So obviously, in addition to these three commandments of idol worship, sexual immorality, or taking up another life, obviously, in addition to that, there are other things that for the sake of those other things, we have to be willing to give our lives. And one of them is when we go to war. Because here's where you see the simple-minded idiocy of ghetto-minded Jews. Those three commandments, when you're acting as an individual in your own personal life, the only time that you should be willing to give your life is for those three commandments. Yes, on a personal, individual level, it's only Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, and Shfichut Damim, idol worship, sexual immorality, and taking of another life. Those are the only three commandments on a personal level. But on a national level, when it involves the Jewish people and the survival of the Jewish people and Jewish honor and liberating the land of Israel and Jewish national issues, That is not just those three commandments. Those three commandments only refer to things on a personal, individual level, but on the national level, which Jews are also part of a nation. And when it's on a national level and involves a national issue that is important to the Jewish people, then you also must be willing to risk your life. You must be willing to serve and risk your life when war is made against the Jewish people. I mean, the Jews in Israel could just all pack up, leave Israel, go move to Brooklyn and say, well, we don't want to live in Israel because there's a risk to our lives. We have to join the Israeli army. We have to fight and the army people get killed. It says you're not allowed to risk your life except for these three commandments. On a national level, you are required to risk your life. You're required to risk your life when your fellow Jews are in danger. You're required to be a soldier when all of Israel has to go to war for survival. Required. And that includes liberating Jewish land. So on a national level, on a collective level, as a people, as a nation, we are required to be willing to risk our lives for Jewish honor and Jewish survival and Jewish land and Jewish principles. For those things, on a national level, it's not just these three commandments. Thank you, Dr. Dan. I hope that clarifies things. And we now go to the great Yesha, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Reb Chaim, how does one grow spiritually being a Torah observant Jew? Is it learning Torah, prayer, reading Jewish books?" Unquote. Obviously, it's all of those things. And Yesha, the important thing is doing it every day. It's important that we set aside time every day to learn Torah. Why are we required every single day, for instance, to put on tefillin or to say prayers three times a day? Why can't we just, you know, for the week we have to put on tefillin? Okay, we don't do it on Shabbat, by the way. You don't put on tefillin on Shabbat. So 6 days a week we got to put on tefillin. Fine. Why can't we just put on the tefillin 6 times in a row, and this way for the rest of the week we're covered? No. You have to do it once a day at a certain time every day to get us used to this, to make this part of our soul. When you do things, when you do good things, when you do Torah, observant things, it becomes part of your soul. It becomes part of you. Just like eating and drinking and sleeping and everything else that is a natural part of your existence, eventually praying and putting on tefillin and doing mitzvot and learning Torah every day, setting aside a certain amount of time to learn some Torah every day. Even if you just start 5 minutes a day and then eventually increase. I'm not saying 5 minutes a day is enough, but eventually you could increase it. But learning some Torah every day, if you make it a daily habit and make it part of your daily existence, it will become part of your soul. It will become part of you. And even if it becomes routine after a while, because take it from someone who does it every day. It does become routine, and sometimes you're not as enthusiastic. You wake up, you're tired in the morning, you know, you wake up early in the morning and you're tired and you got to put on the tefillin. And you're not always enthusiastic and saying, ooh, what a great mitzvah, I'm so enthusiastic. You don't always feel that way. But if you do it every day, there are going to be times when you do feel that way. And when you're going to gain from it spiritually, as long as you do it every day, it becomes part of you. And there will be times when you will gain and be uplifted by it. It will change you as a person. It will make you a good Jew. If you do it for the right reasons, it will make you a good Jew. And it will enable you to work to make this a better world. So it won't only be for you, it'll be for everybody around you. That's why it's important on a daily basis. And if someone is just starting out, start a little bit at a time. You could start out by saying the prayers, by saying the Shema, or doing Shacharit, or doing one of the prayers once a day. And then eventually twice and three, because it's three times a day we pray. But you start out bit by bit. You don't do it all at once. Or you start out by laying tefillin. Or you start out by lighting Shabbat candles. Or you start out by learning Torah 5 minutes every day. You can start small, But make sure you progress. Don't stay in that one spot. And it will make you a better Jew, and it will make you a better human being. And years from now, you'll be so happy that you did that. Thank you, Yesha. And we now go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss the situation regarding the results of the Mississippi Republican Senate race that enabled Tad Cochran to win the runoff primary," unquote. Okay, very important question, EB. It was terrible. It was a disgrace what happened in Mississippi. They allow, and they shouldn't allow this, but they allow open primaries, which means Democrats can vote. Democrats and independents, everybody can vote in the Mississippi Republican primary. It's open to all voters. And so huge numbers of black left-wing Democrats came and voted in the Mississippi Republican primary in order to help Tad Cochran win. The vast majority of real Republicans voted against Tad Cochran, who is a left-wing establishment piece of garbage who was running against a Tea Party candidate, a Tea Party conservative. But Tad Cochran won because huge numbers of left-wing black Democrats came and voted in the Republican primary and distorted what was happening. And Tad Cochran, it's believed that Tad Cochran actually paid people to vote in the Republican primary, paid black left-wing Democrats to vote, which is, of course, a crime, a felony. And hopefully they'll uncover evidence of that, because that's what is believed to have happened there. In addition to that, there is one exception. You can't vote in the Republican primary if you are already in a runoff, if you already voted in the earlier primary for another party. In other words, if you voted in the Democrat primary already, you can't then go and vote in the Republican primary when they have a runoff. So many of those black voters who voted for Tad Cochran were ineligible to vote in the runoff. They weren't allowed to vote there. It was illegal. So he won illegally. In every way, it was illegal. It was corrupt and it was illegal. And Tad Cochran is the lowest of the establishment pieces of garbage in the U.S. Senate. And he was running against a Tea Party conservative. So it's a disgrace. Just a disgrace what happened in Mississippi. And people, if there's anybody in Mississippi that hears this show, you should not vote for Tad Cochran in November. Thank you, EB22. And we now go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Charedim claim that their Torah protects. If so, should they be allowed to flee the South since they are employed by the state as a soldier? Don't flee." Unquote. All right, let me see if I understand this question now. If they're employed by the state, in other words, if they're required to stay in the South, should they be allowed to flee anyway because their Torah protects the Jews in general? No. No. If they're a soldier, they certainly shouldn't be allowed to. No. The Torah does protect the Jewish people. But part of the Torah is fighting for the Jewish people when the Jews are in danger. That's part of the Torah. And so if they're employed in an essential position, like soldier or like someone who's defending the country, they shouldn't be allowed to run away, no. And say, well, the Torah, I observe Torah, that protects. I hope I'm understanding your question, Tag Mechir. If that's your question, then the answer is no. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.